Welcome to the Steelers by the Lake podcast. My name is James, joined once again by my co-host Cody on this tie ball game Tuesday.
Oh, I really don't like how that sounded, but at the same time, it was probably the best sounding it could have possibly been. Tie, what did you call that?
Tie ball game Tuesday.
Tie ball game Tuesday. Ouch, rough. I don't have any other words to say. I have a lot of words to say. I have a lot of words to say, but we'll get to that later.
We're going to get into it on this one.
We are. We're going to get into it a lot, a couple different ways. James and I have already talked a little bit about how we don't see eye to eye on everything. Surprise, surprise. So we'll get into that in a little later.
It'd be a boring show if we agreed on everything, right?
Yeah, very much so. But before we start, James has something.
What is never boring to me?
Five-star reviews.
Ever boring is hearing five-star reviews from our listeners. Big shout out to Bales412 gave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts, which seems to be the best place to do it. I'm just saying. With the title, Feels Like I'm Back at Home. I moved to Colorado, but still love the Steelers and keeping up with what's going on. Listening to this podcast makes me feel like I'm back home.
And that's what we're here to do, baby. Welcome back home. Welcome to the Steelers by the Lake family. Let's get it. We love those. Listen, James especially loves those five-star reviews.
If you listen only, click on the YouTube link on this one. Here's your hug.
Here's your
hug. We love you.
He's giving you a hug. You want me to give you a hug? Nah, fist bump, baby. All right, that's all we're doing.
Bam.
But yeah, so now we have to move on to, that was the Steelers by the Lake news section. Now it is Steelers news section. So prior to the game, what do we got?
We got an outside linebacker added to the practice squad.
Makes sense.
A gentleman by the name of Jacob Tuoti Mariner, formerly of the Atlanta Falcons, been in the league a couple years. Doesn't look like he's really done a whole lot, but has the size prototype that you're looking for. Not a real wave-breaking news, but this is basically just because Taco Charlton got promoted to the 53 and he's not going back to the practice squad. He'll be on it the rest of the season, so they wanted an extra person for depth in case the injury bug hits or, I don't know, COVID or something.
Anything else?
Like that.
Anything else happens negative to us?
Yeah, and this was before the game, so this was before they knew about any injuries that would have happened that we're going to talk about later.
Yep. Chase Claypool ruled out. Chase Claypool ruled out with a toe injury. No bueno, not good. Toe injuries can sometimes, as dumb as it sounds, toe injuries can come sometimes keep players out for more than 1-2 weeks. So we'll have to see happens.
We've seen turf toe in people's careers before.
If it's not handled
Barry
correctly.
Foster, if you remember Barry Foster, the Steelers' single season rushing yards leader still to this day, turf toe was what derailed his career.
Yeah.
It's important that he is given enough time to allow it to properly heal. Do not rush the young man back. He's only in the second year of his career. We'd like it to be a long one. So, yeah. Well, let's let that take its sweet time.
Absolutely.
T.J. Watt.
T.J. Watt, fourth fastest player to 60 sacks. He joins
Incredible. The
likelihood of his brother, J.J. Watt, Reggie White, and Derek Thomas. If you don't remember Derek Thomas, Hall of Famer already, right? Of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Kansas City Chiefs. Simeon Rice?
No. I'm thinking of another Derek, though. Linebacker. I know who you're talking about now, KC.
Yeah. Yeah, Derek Thomas had the record for a long time for most sacks in a game with 7. 7 sacks in a game.
Could you imagine just Steelers having 7 in a game? Like, we would lose our mind. We would freak out.
That was like a normal occurrence in previous years, but now it's like they're consistently getting 3 or 4 every game.
Yep.
Which, honestly, if they keep that up, they're probably going to be right up there with the best in the league by the end of the year because, you know, 4 times 17 is way more than what their normal average of, you know, 55, 56 is. So
it could go over 60
in the right
now.
Ballpark.
We keep saying if they get over 60, what are we going to do? We keep coming up with new ideas every year.
Every year it's an easier job for me, buddy.
Every year it is taking more and more hair off my head.
Yeah, you haven't cut it in what, 2 years?
No. It was since the beginning of COVID. It's close to 2 years. Wow.
Wow.
Let me clarify. I haven't cut the top. I've cut the sides. But I haven't cut the top. The top has not been
touched.
Show
to people how long is that mane of yours right now.
It's back there.
Woo.
It's back there.
Wow.
It's back there.
Yeah, that's shoulder length on the top.
Oh, yeah. A little bit below. A little bit below shoulder.
Business in the front, though.
All business in the front. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
No, it's not a mullet. I'm just messing with you guys. It is not a mullet.
No, I would never get a mullet.
Anyway, so Reggie White was the only one of those three guys that got there way faster than TJ Watt did. He got there in 50 games, had 60 sacks in 50 games. But Reggie White was a whole nother animal. He was 6'5", 292 pounds back, 20, 25 years
ago? Yeah, and the offensive lines were nowhere near as built or in shape. It was basically just a bunch of big guys. Yeah.
Yeah, a 310-pound offensive tackle was a huge offensive tackle back then. And Reggie used to throw these guys with one arm all the time. It was incredible, man. You'd see offensive linemen just go flying backwards because he gave him a one arm. Like, he got that hand up under the armpit and then just picked him up and threw him. It was incredible,
Tossed him, man.
It was absolutely incredible. But, yeah, pretty neat to see the company that TJ has joined. Also, I didn't have this in the notes here, but – if you think about what happened in this game, and we're going to get to the sack totals on that, we got a little bit of an update then on the Steelers' all-time sack leaders, and I think something's changed on positions 4 and 5.
It has. It has changed.
Just another fun thing to talk about there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, so we found out shortly after the Claypool diagnosis, it was Saturday night, late Saturday, that Ben Roethlisberger had been tested positive for COVID-19, unfortunately. He reported it himself, started feeling a little bit under the weather Saturday when he woke up, immediately contacted the team doctor, got tested, came back later on that day positive. He is fully vaccinated, so his process in order to return means he just has to test negative twice within a 24-hour period, and he's good to go for the following game. But unfortunately, that was going to keep him out against the Detroit Lions, which would be significant.
Little bit more than it should have been. But again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. With the injury to Chase Claypool, Steelers did elevate Steven Sims from the practice squad. Now, Steven Sims was more of the guy we expected to get elevated to take over or replace Ray Ray if he continued to have issues with punt and kick return. We more expected Anthony Miller to get promoted, but I think Steven Sims explains maybe he's doing a little bit more in practice to show his versatility, explosiveness, whatever you want to call it. But Steven Sims was elevated before the game.
And maybe just practicing harder, too, because sometimes that is a factor where a guy is rewarded for his hard work in practice. You never know. They're not really allowed to say what they see in practice unless somebody says something to the media or mistakenly a little too loud around the media. But Steven Sims has been on the practice squad longer too, so it could just be something as simple as the seniority of being with the team a little bit longer.
Yeah, absolutely. But now it's time for game chat.
So post game,
it's about where I'm ready to go.
Fast forward past it, am I?
Unfortunately, not, because I would fast forward with you. Pittsburgh started off phenomenal.
Yeah.
First drive was arguably one of the best drives we've had all season. A lot of balanced run pass, really good holes made by the offensive line for the running game, and Mason Rudolph looked confident and comfortable in the pocket.
Pretty accurate in the first drive too.
Yeah, and
right on target with his passes.
That was it. That was the game. Okay. I don't know.
The best drive of the game, which is unfortunate that it happened on the very first drive.
Yep.
And then pretty much not again the rest of the game. You know, they put some drives together, but not enough. And that just kind of seems to be a common theme going on. And at least we know now that it's not necessarily just on the quarterback here. Because changing out Ben for Mason didn't really get any drastically better results.
I would argue
slightly lesser on the results than what we had with Ben.
Let's clarify something, though. Yeah. I think if Ben's in this game against the winless Detroit Lions, we destroy them.
I think we definitely win. Absolutely.
When I say destroy, I mean win by double digits. It's not necessary. I mean, we could have won by 11.
I feel like the way they played, they wouldn't have blown them out if they had Jerome Bettis and Greg Lloyd and Troy Polamalu out there. Like the other guys that would have still been on the field stunk it up enough that it's tough to overcome that kind of stuff.
That's fair. I mean, that's fair. I just think I did not see enough from Mason Rudolph to think that he led that game to the best of either of their abilities. But I think that Ben in that game against that defense wasn't that great. Secondary, especially. I mean,
yeah.
So I think that Ben has a field day with that secondary, and I would agree that 350
definitely
plus.
Probably completes at least another 7 to 9 passes that Mason had incomplete. I would agree
on
that
and
for
not
sure
throw because, that interception.
Yeah, yeah, and the only thing on the interception is if Kalen Ballage cut that short, then Ben's throwing an interception too. And Kalen has not shown himself to be reliable in any facet of the game yet. So like I struggle with that one because we don't know how far he was supposed to run before he cut.
That's fair.
But if he ran the route the way he was supposed to, it's an ugly, ugly pass. Yeah, because there's no running back out there going to catch a ball thrown that high. Hmm. Sorry, not even Derrick Henry's tall enough for that one.
Nope. And I just think that I think at that point Mason was falling off the rails enough that I think that was a bad pass on Mason. Here's the thing. You see, he waited and saw where the player was cutting. It's not like that was a corner route. It's not like he was going up towards the outside of the sideline. He was, when he cut, he was going straight over, and Mason should have been able to see that and either adjusted and thrown to where he was or thrown the ball away, which he couldn't have done. I think he was in the pocket. I think that Ben in that game, and you were never going to know. This is all hindsight.
Yeah.
This is all speculation. I would have liked to have seen Ben in this game against a...
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you that I do believe that they definitely win with Ben because there's that much of a difference talent-wise between Mason and Ben. And that's Ben at this stage, not even talking about Ben in his prime. Ben, how he has played thus far this year, is better enough than what Mason played in that game that it gives you enough more that you complete a couple of those drives that end in field goals in the end zone, or even get a couple more drives long enough to get some field goals that resulted in punts, which would have been enough to get some wins.
Yep. That's about where I'm
at. One thing I will give Mason credit for in this, two things really. One, they did a couple rollouts with him that they have not done with Ben where he threw on the move. Mason was precise in those throws. He hit those throws on the move. They were never deep downfield. They were usually only like 3 to 5 yards.
Yeah.
But it is a way to kind of cover up the fact that you don't have an offensive line that's blocking really well. You can roll out like that, keep the offensive line on the move. It really kind of eliminates all pass rushing angles. And as long as everything goes the way it's supposed to with the route running, you can kind of steal some easy completions in some cheap yards. And they did it a couple of times, and it's the first time I've seen that from this offense. They just don't do that with Ben because he's not mobile like that.
Yeah, anymore.
And to that mobility, we did see two very nice scrambles from Mason. And we got to give him credit for that because everybody claims that he's just some statue back there with zero mobility. Well, guess what? He's got the longest run by any Pittsburgh Steeler this year from the line of scrimmage now with 26 yards.
Jeez.
That's including all the wide receiver end-arounds that went so well. And then the very next run that he has for 11 yards, what did he do? He lowers his shoulder and concusses a DB that's trying to come up and light him out. That DB
that
hit
was,
with everything
that
he
was,
got and knocked himself out.
That was so just PTSD on his part. He remember getting lit up before, and he was like, I'm doing it to somebody else.
So. He's not a small guy.
No, not at
you
all.
Know, he's got to be a good 225, 230 pounds, and he's in very good shape. If you've seen any pictures of him you know, from the off season or anything. He's not in the same shape he was when he was a college player. He's in drastically better shape than he was then. A lot more muscle than he had previously, too. So he can lower the shoulder on a smaller defender like that and make things happen. So although I do not believe for a second that Mason had a great game, I wouldn't even call it a good game. I would call it a very adequate game at best. And that's not what you're looking for out of a starting quarterback.
I also feel like it's adequate because of the rushes. I think if you ignore those rushing plays where he did really well, it's a subpar game. I think the rushes, yeah. I mean, 30 for 50 for 242 yards, a touchdown interception. The touchdown being on the very first drive of the game. And then to a wide open receiver on blown coverage, might I add.
Yeah.
Nothing.
No arguing with it.
Nothing in my mind or my memory of this game was like Mason Rudolph has a chance to lead us somewhere. I think if he was starting a full season with the team we have right now, we probably win 6 or 7 games max. And that's with Mike Tomlin, who doesn't have a losing season.
I think they could still make it to 8 wins, but I don't think 9 or 10 would be realistic. So I'm not far off from you on that. The only thing that I will say is that when I look at this game, I look at the drives in overtime, and he took them down the field and got them in field goal range twice, and twice his receiver fumbled the ball in field goal range. So twice he got you close enough for Boswell to put one through the uprights and win the game, and the players on the receiving end of the football straight up just blew it. And I hate to say that about Pat Freiermuth, because Pat Freiermuth has had his excellent rookie season.
Yep.
And overall in this game, he did fairly well. But at that moment at the end of the game, when he catches that ball and turns upfield instead of going out of bounds, that's a decision that cost him the opportunity to attempt a field goal that could have won the game.
Yeah. And so again, I don't want to go too. I mean, we're way off where we normally go with this because we're just talking about the game, which is fine. I like it. Maybe today's not going to be a normal go through all the stat lines like we normally do. That's totally fine. If we talk about the game, we'll hit all the stats sooner or later. But I just think that again, and James and I talked about this before. I don't think Mason Rudolph lost the game for Pittsburgh, but he didn't win it for him either. And I'm immensely irritated, disappointed, and frustrated with the fact that we chose at the end of the regulation to kneel the ball instead of trying to march down the field and end it. Or was it
a lot of
that,
time left?
Or was that halftime?
That was halftime.
Halftime. Sorry, my apologies.
Yeah.
I was still annoyed with that decision. In a game like this, and the announcers talked about it when we went for the field goal early on in the game, the first field goal attempt that we got with Boz. They said, you know, this is a game that you don't want to let you do not want the Detroit Lions hanging around thinking they have a shot at this game, because a team that desperate for a win, if you keep it close, will find a way. They found a way not to lose another game.
Yeah.
So
they did.
I don't know. That's just where I'm at with that. As a whole.
Let's move on to the running game, man.
Yeah, Najee Harris had a great game.
He played great, man. He got plenty of yards, converted on third down. He did everything that you'd ask of him. Even got in the end zone once. It just got called back due to penalty.
On a crap penalty?
Yeah. It wasn't great.
No. I ain't going to get fined for saying it. I'll say it. Bad call. Bad call, ref.
Did he have a hold of the man's jersey? Yes, he did. But that happens on every single play.
Every play.
So that guy had no chance of making that tackle. But yeah, it's just unfortunate. You wish they would have let that one go through. That's a 4-point swing there. They kicked the field goal on that drive. And obviously those 4 points are game changing when you look at a final score that's tied at 16-16. Not getting in the end zone there makes a huge difference in the final score.
Yep.
Mason, the only other significant rushing yardage in the game, Benny Snow had one carry for 4 yards, continues to be in his very minor contributions offensively, at least moderately effective running the ball. I don't think that I would even come close to saying, hey, let's get Benny more touches, but I would argue that I wouldn't want to see any more touches for Kalen Ballage because it just doesn't turn out well.
And that's sad to say because
yeah,
we were excited for him in preseason, really excited for him. It just didn't happen.
It's a great athlete. He's a nice, big, strong body, but it just doesn't translate on the field. You know, he drops balls when you throw it to him, and he can't find open holes, and he runs into the back of defenders. So it's, oh, what are you going to do?
Mark Sanchez 2.0.
Just kidding, yeah, right? Just kidding, thank God he didn't follow what he did.
Just kidding. But yeah, that was about it for the rushing. We can move on to receiving. We'll get to that. Never mind. We'll get to that later. Deontay Johnson led the team in yards with 83 on 13 targets. He had 7 catches. Deontay Johnson is, I think, easily the number. I mean, obviously on the stats he is, and in the depth chart he is, and everything. But Deontay Johnson is the number one with both Juju and Claypool out. Deontay Johnson's the guy, and he played up to it, minus the fumble towards the end of the game, which was very frustrating in overtime. Excuse me.
He had a drop in the game, too, that was pretty costly.
Yeah.
And honestly, I just want to see a higher conversion rate on these passes. When we keep on seeing games that when the Steelers lose, Deontay's right around 50% of the balls thrown his way that he catches. I want to see more out of him in the combative catches category. It seems that if somebody's close by or on him, he ain't catching it.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be a number one wide receiver, you've got to convert those competitive catches.
Yep, I agree completely. The next player in yardage-wise is what I'm looking at. Ray McLeod, 9 receptions for 63 yards. Great, great game for – I mean, that's probably his best game as a Steeler by far.
His best game in his career receiving-wise. He's never had 9 catches before, and I doubt he's been over 63 yards.
Fair.
So Ray did a good job. He took a really hard hit on the sideline on one catch and hung on to the ball. So you got to be impressed as far as Ray doing a good job of catching it when it was thrown his way. 9 catches out of 12 targets is pretty dang good. You'd like to see a little more production as far as the yardage. But again, that isn't always up to him. If you're just throwing little dump offs and wide receiver screens, it's tough to get a lot of yardage out of it.
Yep.
And Ray is not a very refined wide receiver, so it's not like you're going to run a lot of fancy passing plays and throw it to him because it's probably not going to end all that well.
Yep.
Wide receiver wise, it was you wish you would have seen a lot more involvement from other guys in the game. James Washington did to get the touchdown catch, 2 catches for 15 yards. Touchdown catch wasn't that difficult because there was nobody near him.
Nope, not even close. Not even close. Every other catch in this game came from either a tight end, running back, or another position that we forgot we had, fullback. We'll get to that later. Pat Freiermuth.
Guy's got good hands.
Guy's got good. He can make a move. Pat Freiermuth.
He's a really good tackler on special teams. He's leading the team in special teams tackles.
He had another big one or big two this past game.
The very first special teams tackle of the game. The very first kickoff after that touchdown. He went down there and he caught that dude at the 15.
Yep.
Come on. That's game changing catching him that far back.
We need that. We need that consistently. But
he did it the week before, too.
Yeah, you're right. Pat Freiermuth, 5 catches on 9 targets, 31 yards. Obviously, that costly, costly fumble that ended the game in overtime. Really sad to see. But I think that's just growing pains. That's just growing pains from Pat. Pat's going to learn from that.
Yeah, I guarantee you he will never make that mistake ever again the rest of his career.
And I don't like the play call to begin with.
Honestly, in the situation where they were at, you know, they were at the 39-yard line before the play. 15 seconds left. You got no timeouts. You do have to throw to the sideline, no matter where it is, because if you throw over the middle, you might not have enough time to get up to the line and spike the ball. So I feel like the call wasn't that awful. You really just wanted to get another 4 or 5 yards closer to make that kick and drop it from a 56-yarder down to like a 51 or 52-yarder where you're pretty comfortable with Boz making that. When you're pushing, you know, a 56, 57-yard field goal in those kind of conditions, that's really on the outside edge of Boz's range. And when you're swinging a little harder, sometimes you pull it or push it. So I get them trying to do something that's just going to get them another 3-4 yards or whatever. But you feel like you shouldn't have to have that conversation in the huddle. Everybody should understand there's 15 seconds on the clock. If you catch the ball, your number one priority is getting out of bounds.
Yeah, I guess my problem's more with the play call. In my mind, you have to do a 5 or 10 yard out, not a, hey, I'm going to run immediately down the line of scrimmage. I'm pretty sure he caught the ball on the line of scrimmage, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think it was right at
you have
right
to,
around there.
Yeah, you if you're going to get yards, you have to make the ball get those yards in the air, and then you catch it, go out of bounds. It needs to be immediate. We've seen so many teams in the NFL be able to do this so well with guys like Davante Adams, Stephon Diggs, all these quick players. We have 2 or 3 quick guys in Deontay Ray-Ray and James Washington. All can do those out routes. You put one of those on that route, and maybe you have Pat Freiermuth come across the middle and hope that you have time in case those are covered to get up and spike it. That's last resort. But I did not like the play call of passing to the line of scrimmage. We do that too often. I hated that play call. And I felt it looked bad for Pat as well.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I would prefer the ball to be down the field, but realistically, the defense knows the down and distance, and they know the situation. And there's a reason that 2 guys hit him before he could get out of bounds. It's because they were playing that 5 to 10 yard range mm-hmm. to not allow it. So well, if then you try to throw it there, it's probably going to get picked off.
Well, then you know what you do? You have Pat Freiermuth on the outside, or like on the outside next to Deontay Johnson. Have Deontay do a 7 yard out and have Pat run straight down the sideline. Pump fake it hard right to Pat right at the beginning. Open up some space for Deontay. That's an easy first down or easy 5 yards, 6 yards. I think we don't scheme anything anymore that I see in things where I look at other, like Bruce Arians and Ken Wisenhunt were phenomenal schemers. They literally schemed players to be open in certain situations. And this was one of those situations that I felt like we needed something more to happen here. Not just throw. I mean, how many times do we do this a game, let alone when it mattered in overtime?
Yeah.
It's not shocking anybody. And we talked about this last year with how many times do we do these stupid slants? I'm just frustrated.
Clearly. I get it. I just think it's like a very, very limited option as far as what plays you have.
I do understand that. Distance. I do understand that. But I haven't seen us do anything different.
No it's hard to argue.
Yeah. So that's where I'm at. Again, Pat Freiermuth, 5 catches, 31 yards. Najee Harris, 4 catches for 28 yards. Again, all around good game for Najee. 4 targets, 4 catches. Attaboy. Frickin' boy.
I wish they would have gone to Pat more earlier in the game.
I agree.
I felt like they didn't really use him at all until basically the fourth quarter and overtime. And at that point, it was almost too late. You know, when how many times in this game was it 3rd and 5 or 3rd and 6 or 7 and they bombed it deep and it was incomplete?
Yep.
Like, it's driving me out of my mind. When you only need that 5 to 7 yards, why would you not be using your tight end who almost never goes down on first contact? Almost
never.
Or
if he does, he's going over the player for more yards.
Yeah. So I felt like the under usage of the tight end position in this game was a real, real problem. I mean, Ebron, you throw it to him, what, twice? He catches both of them. No drops for Ebron in the game, which is great. Gentry has been really coming along. And in this game, nothing.
No targets.
Didn't even throw it at him. Come on. The guy proved himself in those games. And now we're just going to cut him completely out of the playbook.
Yep.
So, I mean, these are the guys that can open up the middle of the field, and then we decide not to use them until the game's almost over. You need to open up the middle of the field to open up other parts of the field. If you don't ever throw it there, all they do is cover the sidelines all game long. I guess it's a little frustrating, but not as frustrating as Kendrick Green's snapping ability in this game.
Yeah.
Because he kept on snapping it high, and then in overtime snaps it over Mason's head, causing a 23-yard loss and literally ending a drive that we started at the opponent's 48.
Yep.
There's an excellent defensive series, forced a punt from their own end zone. We fielded at the 48-yard line of Detroit, and all we do is lose yards on the drive because of a bad snap. It was like an awful nightmare from last year's playoff game.
Flashback. But flashback.
Same dang number on the center and everything. It's like, come on. There was at least three or four of them, right? In this game where he almost snapped it.
There was at least three where Mason was reaching above his head and pulling the ball in, yeah.
Yeah, Mason did a hell of a job in this game to dial those in until that last one.
There was no catching that. Mm-mm.
Yeah, it was just way too high. There's nothing he could do about it. So that ain't even on him. Like, honestly, it's kind of more kudos to him for dialing all the other ones in that were so bad all game.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is just like a reaction, maybe a change in technique from previous weeks, because the previous week he really got his butt handed to him by those interior defensive linemen. So maybe he was focusing a little more on getting his hand back up after snapping, and it's causing a little less accuracy on it. I don't know. Whatever it is, I'd rather he's getting his butt pushed backwards by a defensive tackle than snapping it over the quarterback's head. So we got to fine-tune a balance on this somewhere, man. But that wasn't it. That was not the balance we were looking for.
That was not it at all. Derek Watt also one target, one catch, 9 yards. Phenomenal. Like to see Derek Watt get involved. Like to see him, you know, be used as a player in things. That's what he was wonderful with in San Diego, because it was San Diego before while he was still there. Yeah. And he was a phenomenal out-of-the-backfield catcher, receiver.
Yeah, he's got good hands, and he's got good tackle-breaking ability, too.
Yep.
You know, he's not one of those guys that goes down as soon as somebody hits him. So nice to see him getting used and kind of moved into the offense a little bit more. It is an effective part. One catch for 9 yards is an effective play from a fullback.
Very, very effective. Very effective. offensive line, you talked about Kendrick Green.
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk about the guards and get it out of the way. Yeah. Kevin Dotson goes down with an ankle injury. It's significant, it looked like. Ended up getting carted off of the sideline. He's been checked out since, and we have since found out it is a high ankle sprain.
Yeah. If you don't know anything about that.
If you're lucky, can be a couple of weeks.
That's almost worse than a broken bone. It's almost worse than a broken bone. It's very close.
Yeah, a bad high ankle sprain can keep you out a month and a half, 2 months. If we're lucky, maybe he's back in a couple of weeks, but I would expect him to miss some time. They're calling him week to week. Whenever they call somebody week to week, it usually means they're going to be out at least a couple of weeks.
Yeah, but not.
So that's bad news.
Yeah, their hope is probably to get him back sooner, which is why he's not on the IR automatically. That's my guess.
Yeah, Trey Turner also with an ankle injury in the game.
Yep.
I haven't heard anything since the game on that particular injury, but I do believe it to be a less significant one. I think he's got a lot better chance of playing this upcoming week against the Chargers, which you're going to need, because you're going to probably have a backup at the left guard position, and you're going to start running real thin on interior offensive linemen. You look like you got something to add to that.
Just the fact that Joe Haig, I felt personally that Joe Haig and J.C. Hasenauer came in and played fairly well.
I agree.
I was impressed with that.
I've been very skeptical of J.C. Hasenauer playing guard because he's an undersized guy. He does look like he's filled out a little bit more. He's holding his own. I did see on one run play on the interior, he ran up. He had no defensive lineman. He found a linebacker, and he walled him off. Turned his body, said, "You're going to have to run through me," and Najee ran right behind his back. It was a perfect job, you know, and very technically sound. He didn't go out there and try to dive at somebody to try and pancake someone.
Yep.
He walled someone off and eliminated a player from the game. And Haig looks comfortable at guard. But again, we're going back to that compensatory formula thing. And if Haig plays too many snaps, then we lose a compensatory pick. So
yep.
I really don't want to see him have to play too many snaps. But I think this will show us having both J.C. Hasenauer and B.J. Finney getting a lot more action in future weeks here. So we'll see if there's any difference, or if they just go straight to Hasenauer, or maybe it switches from one week to another on who they go with. Tough to say, but at least we know now Joe Haig can fill in at guard if need be, which puts Zach Banner as your next man up outside at tackle, which I'm still itching to see. But I do think that Dan Moore had a better game.
Yeah.
I didn't see Dan Moore getting his butt kicked like he had in previous weeks.
No, and the penalty he had was, again, bullcrap.
Yeah.
I think Dan Moore had one of the best games that he's had so far.
Yeah, Okorafor, nice game too. Didn't see him getting beat out there. Honestly, I think he's quietly putting together a pretty solid year. I think it'll be interesting to see if Pittsburgh tries to retain him at the end of the year.
Yeah.
I don't think he's by any means like a world beater. I don't think anybody's going to be talking about him for Pro Bowl votes or anything. No. But as far as an offensive tackle of starting caliber, I do believe he is that. So maybe he's at least an answer at the position. You re-sign him and bring back the same four offensive tackles that you had this year, next year, and then you don't have to go get one in the draft.
Yeah. Speaking of Pro Bowl, though, reminder to everybody, Pro Bowl voting has opened today. So make sure you go vote for your Steelers players for Pro Bowl.
Yeah, especially the ones that deserve it.
Yeah, like TJ Watt.
TJ and Cam. And
Najee Harris.
Najee and
Deontay, maybe even. No, Pat.
Yeah.
Pat.
Yeah.
Pat.
Yeah.
On the back.
For sure.
All right. Anyways.
it's about it, though.
Yeah. Moving to the defensive. Well,
Boss.
Yeah. I was like, wait a second.
Boss, president, baby.
Moving to the defensive side of the ball. Let's go defensive line. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. D-line.
Let's move there.
Move there.
Let's talk about this defensive line, baby.
Oh, you wearing a Cam Hayward shirt? That's so adorable. He had 2 sacks on the day. 5 total tackles. Look at that. You looking like a stud. Listen, if you're listening to this online on Apple Podcasts or Podbean or Apple or Spotify, even depending if it's up on there, we're trying to get that figured out. If you're listening, go look at the YouTube right around 36 minutes and just look at James. He's just strutting his stuff. Beautiful, beautiful 50-year-old. Anyways.
Holy cow, come on now, man.
I had to hit you with it.
Wow.
Yeah, Cam Hayward.
Tell the people the James Pierre truth of my age.
Stop. 42, there you go. I like that.
There it is.
Cam Hayward, 5 total tackles, three singles, 3 by himself, 2 assisted. The 2 sacks is where it's big. 2 sacks. No batted down balls or picks, unfortunately.
Which is rare for him these days, but just huge impact from Cam in this game, right? You know, when everything's falling apart around him, he's got linebackers getting washed from one side of the field to the other, and you know, people getting injured early on in the game, like poor Joe Hayden went down before you barely even saw him in the game. And what's a consistent thing for Pittsburgh, no matter what, Cam Hayward puts together a really solid game every week, and oftentimes a dominant one. It's tough to call 2 sacks in a game anything other than dominant, honestly. Starting to put some numbers together for the season that are going to make it hard to ignore him and keep on building that resume. We're talking about it. You know, Cam seems like he's got a lot of time left in him to be able to continue playing at this pace. If he can do it for a few more years, I like his chances of getting in the Hall of Fame. He's getting those numbers up there on the sack totals, and I like his chances of Pro Bowl ballot and maybe even first-team All-Pro again this year.
Heck yeah. He needs them. Going down the list, Chris Wormley, 3 total tackles. Nothing crazy for him. He didn't stand out in my mind, personally. I don't know if you have anything to say about that. No,
I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of the world of Wormley, but he's not giving us anything in the pass rush, which we need. Again, I've said this all season long. Mm-hmm. Somebody other than Cam and TJ needs to get after the quarterback.
Yeah.
Not happening from him, not happening from Isaiah Buggs either, right?
Nope.
Isaiah filled up the stat line a little bit more, getting 5 total tackles, 3 assists out of that. Also getting pushed around quite a bit in the running game. You know, he's not the traditional nose tackle that we're used to. He's a big, strong dude, but for some reason, his anchor ability just isn't there. So I don't know if maybe last week it looked like he pulled a groin or had a hip or something. Maybe he's playing through some injuries that are inhibiting his ability to anchor against the run. But we're not seeing him getting tackles for loss, and we're not seeing a ton of stops. Just kind of like those arm tackles and grabbing somebody as they're running by kind of stuff.
Yeah, someone that didn't have a ton of playing time, but played fairly well, even though the stat line might not show it, Isaiah Loudermilk. I was actually fairly impressed with his gameplay. You don't agree with me. That's okay.
Well, nah, it's tough, man. When the defense gets run on that badly.
That's fair.
I saw them targeting Isaiah Loudermilk, but it's a bad combination of him being the rookie and Joe Schobert being behind him. And Schobert just got mauled anytime somebody came near him. I honestly think if a wide receiver would have tried blocking him one-on-one, they would have pancaked him. That's just how soft Joe Schobert's playing.
Joe Schobert is one of those players that would, rather than take the contact, would rather back up with you 15 times and prevent the player from running the rest of the field than try to make a stop. When in reality, he just needs to stay home and not allow himself to be pushed across. And this is James saying this in a previous message to me, literally across the front line of the, like, to the opposite side of the line and past the tackle.
Yeah. There was a point where they ran the ball from their left to the right. Schobert was lined up as the right inside linebacker. Bush was on the left when you're looking at it from the TV angle behind the defense. So you had Schobert on the right screen. Bush engages his offensive lineman. You see Schobert run right past him, completely abandoning his lane, engage an offensive lineman, and just get driven completely out of the picture. Pass left tackle. And where do you think the running back went? He went right back through the hole where Joe Schobert was supposed to be because he didn't plug it. Like, I get it. I don't think that a 240-pound, 230-pound, whatever Joe Schobert is, middle linebacker is going to dominate an offensive lineman. But you have hole responsibilities. You have gap responsibilities, and you have to stay in it. Even if you're just holding your ground, you got to be able to at least do that when you're consistently getting pushed backwards, play after play after play. I mean, Joe Schobert filled up the stat line as far as total tackles and assists and everything. He got in on a lot of tackles, but dang near every single one of them he was making from his backside. Or he's getting run over, or he's grabbing somebody's ankles while they're going by. There was one play again this game where I saw him get dragged for a good 10 yards after the initial contact. It's just disheartening. You know, when the tradition in Pittsburgh is having linebackers that are tough, that hit you hard, they knock you on your butt, even as recently as Vince Williams last year, Vince Williams ain't getting dragged 10 yards. He was not the most athletic, gifted dude in the world. But you know what? He was really hard-nosed, and he would never get dragged backwards like Joe Schobert does.
Yep. Robert Spillane.
Yeah, Spillane don't get dragged
John
like that.
John Bostic wouldn't get run over like that.
Yeah.
Sad. Just very sad.
Yeah, honestly, I wonder if there is a certain point that they start letting some of these other middle linebackers into the base defense to see if it'll help improve it. I really think it should be Spillane, but I do wonder, are you going to ever give like UG3 a shot? Are you going to give Buddy Johnson a shot? You got to give something a try. Devin Bush is not playing his best football right now either, although I don't think that he's as bad as what we're seeing out of Joe Schobert right now. But Devin isn't doing himself any favors, man. He missed a lot of tackles.
He missed a ton of tackles, and just he played a different version of soft in my mind. It was hard to watch. He had 8 total tackles, but again, Devin Bush probably missed 3 or 4, that could have potentially stopped touchdown runs or this or that. Very unfortunate to see that out of him. As far as other middle linebackers go, we saw a little bit of Marcus Allen on special teams.
Yep.
That's about it, for middle linebackers. Outside linebackers, Alex Highsmith had a phenomenal game, 2 tackles for loss. I believe 11 total tackles. He could have played better, but I just don't think he was the weak spot on our defense. Let me clarify. Joe Schobert was the weak spot on our defense, but I think Alex Highsmith had a decent game, all things considered.
I think Alex really ramped his game up in the fourth quarter and in overtime when TJ was out. Knowing that somebody had to start giving that backside pursuit on the run defense. But a couple of times earlier in this game, Pittsburgh really struggled against the run in the second and third quarter. At least twice during that time, I saw him give up the edge and easily in long plays running around his side.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Where he just kind of dove inside.
And nobody was
outside. And by doing
so,
he gave up a huge lane around the outside. And then another time, he just didn't get out there. Yeah. You know, he stayed blocked and it was not able to seal the edge. When you're that last guy on the line of scrimmage, you got to be able to seal the edge. And it, if you're going to force it outside, it needs to be something where the running back has to loop backwards, which gives time to your linebackers and safeties to come and help.
Yep.
And on those two particular run plays, he didn't do it. So I do feel like he kind of took it personal and played a lot better as the game went on. But at least twice in this game, he gave up the edge and large run plays resulted.
Yeah.
Still want to see more out of him in the pass rushing game, man. We had, 1.5 sacks from him so far in the year, and it was all in one game.
Yeah.
So we need more, especially if TJ is going to miss some significant time, which there's a possibility here. You know, just because there's a negative result on the MRI doesn't mean that he's going to come back the next week.
No,
he could still miss a couple weeks with the injury. So if he's going to miss time, it can't be just Cam Hayward rushing the quarterback and everybody else just standing around getting blocked by whoever they're up against.
Yep.
Somebody's got to start getting at the quarterback.
Well, we'll get to that. TJ Watt had a sack. TJ Watt had 2 tackles for loss, 5 total tackles. TJ Watt obviously got hurt in this game. Very scary. I loved when they looked around when that happened and showed all the concerned fans, because like that shows, you know, he don't get me wrong, Cam's great and Minka's good, but TJ Watt is the heart of that defense right now.
Absolutely. And the heart of the fans, man. We love TJ Watt because he's so dang good and so much energy coming from him. How many times does he get a sack on a third down or a fourth down or a strip sack or a tackle for loss or bat a pass down that ends a drive? Like, it just happens all the time.
Yep.
He's such an amazing playmaker. I know I text you when he went down and I said, if this is serious, if he misses the rest of this year, this season is over, period.
Yep.
Like, they cannot come back from it. They don't have the next person in line. They just don't. I mean, Taco Charlton is at least a good backup, and I think Taco will do okay in a starting role for a week or two, but you're not going to get 11.5 sacks in games.
It's almost like, not even the sacks. It's the pressure. It's what he brings to the table around that. TJ Watt applies so much pressure. The fact that he's on the field makes offensive players play differently. You know what I mean? So very curious to see how that's going to impact us moving forward. But Taco Charlton, 3 total tackles this game. Nothing crazy. Again, playing mostly a backup role on this game as in that outside linebacker position.
You see that Derek Tuzka stat line there?
Yeah, it looks great.
Yeah.
He didn't play.
No, he played.
I know, but he, like...
he didn't register anything.
Do anything. dumb. Dumb. Moving on to secondary. I'm going to start somewhere. You want to see... Oh, hang on. I got to take a moment to breathe. Because...
It's time
to talk about him. And I have to talk...
In a positive light.
Yes, and I'm confused. I don't do this often. Terrell Edmonds had an okay game. Okay, there, I said it. Woof. Wow. Anyone else feel the need to drink something? Like,
I hope you guys screenshotted that. You're not going to hear it too often out of Cody's mouth. But you know what? It's the truth. Terrell had an excellent sack in the game.
Don't call it excellent. Don't call it excellent.
It was described by one of us as the easiest sack ever gifted to somebody. And he didn't screw it up. Congratulations.
Nobody even saw him coming.
You know who it was.
Nobody even saw him coming. Nobody even gave him a second look. He had a straight line to the quarterback. I'm impressed that he didn't screw it up.
Honestly, when you're coming that fast at a quarterback, right,
half
down
the time
middle,
they
those
make
are
a
the
move.
Easiest ones. Those are the easiest ones for the QB to juke. So it is actually a pretty good open field tackle for him to get him and get him to the ground.
No, the quarterback was just dumb and didn't move.
Not well enough. He did try to shake him.
Yeah.
He did try, but yeah, that did not happen. And I thought Terrell Edmonds overall had a good game. You didn't see him be a casualty in the secondary.
Shockingly.
He helped up against the run. Nice improvement, nice bounce back from the week previous.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, the week previous was not his best game. So
every time he does something good is an improvement. So every time.
Wow.
Every time.
Wow. Speaking of guys that are just getting the raw end of the deal here, man, Minka with a really nice interception in this game. It gets called back for a defensive holding that was suspect at best. Yeah, suspect at best on the defensive holding call. And there it is again, another game-breaking type play that Minka Fitzpatrick makes that the referees take away that is just... Oh, boy. You know, this is a couple of times now where Minka basically sealed the game for Pittsburgh and the refs took it away.
Yep.
So you hate to see it because Minka is playing a lot better than what the narrative is. But a lot of the reason that the narrative is the way it is because the stats aren't there. And the stats aren't there on plays that Minka is just getting them taken away from him. He's making the plays. It's getting taken away by the referees.
Yeah. James Pierre had a phenomenal game. In my personal opinion.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good, man. Very good against the run, right?
Yes. Yes. I wasn't expecting him to play that well against the run. And wasn't it, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't it him that busted that one quick pass play to the outside that he just blew it up?
Yeah.
Or was that Terrell? Okay, that was Pierre.
No, I think it was him. Yeah, I think it was Pierre.
Phenomenal.
No, honestly, I felt like the corners might have had one of their best games of the year. And when it got in later on in the game, I mean, we saw Cam Sutton dang near got an interception. If that offensive lineman doesn't step in front of him at the last second and block his view, he easily picks it. He saw the tight end screen coming all the way, got over there, positioned himself perfectly. Ball hits him in the hands, but he couldn't see it into his hands, so he didn't catch it.
Yeah.
Frustrating because we still don't have anything for interceptions from our starting corners. Just one from James Pierre. But Trey Norwood played a decent amount late in the game, and he made some real nice plays too. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in the future here. Seems as though maybe Arthur Marlette is losing some playing time, maybe some increased time here for Pierre and for Trey Norwood. And I'm here for it because I really think both of them are better cover guys.
Yeah. I agree with you completely. I was looking back at our messages during the game, and I said, James frickin' Pierre, so it must have been him.
yep.
Yeah, so I don't know. Anyone else you want to talk about in the secondary? I don't have anyone personally that I want to talk about.
That's it. Yeah, I didn't really see anything significant. Killebrew got a little bit of playing time. I didn't see him get smoked, so nope. Yeah, good job.
Yay. Special teams, boss for president, as always.
Absolutely perfect on the game. Three for three with a 51-yarder on his long. Honestly, if they would have just been able to hang on to the ball in one of those drives in overtime and not screw up all three of them, then I think Boz seals the game and they win it.
Yep. That's all I have to say. Presley Harden played okay.
Yeah, he was all right.
61 long. I'd like to see that more often.
Underrated. Presley Harden III. Did save a touchdown by making a tackle in this game.
However,
he was the last line.
If you go back and look at that, they missed a very, very blatant block in the back call on James Pierre. Just because it didn't have an immediate effect on the play, it could have affected the play. We'll never know now. But clear block in the back before he even took the ball, fielded the punt. So yeah, but phenomenal play by Presley Harden to basically just attach his arm and not let go and then get swung around.
Yeah, he basically latched onto that leg and just whipped him down by his leg, which is great, man. You know, that's what you want. It's nice to have a punter that's not a little tiny pushover guy, and it's not like we've had that recently because we haven't.
No.
But I just go back to fond memories of Daniel Sepulveda, the Steelers punter. Ooh. I know I love throwing his name out there every now and then. The poor guy tore his ACLs, both of them, at different times in his short career with Pittsburgh. But he was 6'2", 229, ran a 4.49 40, had... I want to say 26 reps on the bench or something, and it was a former linebacker. And when he hit people, it was awesome. It was so awesome. You never worried about somebody breaking a punt against Daniel Sepulveda. And you know what? If PH3 gets an opportunity against somebody and he gets a hand on him, I think he's taking him down every time.
Yeah, yeah, I'd probably agree with that. Kick and punt return, Ray Ray had all eight returns. Two kickoff returns for 17.5 average, 21 was his long, and then Ray Ray 6 returns on punts for 9 average, with 13 being his long. Again, nothing too crazy there. That's going to finalize talking about the game. Injuries after, we hit all of them, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Joe Hayden with the foot injury. They're calling that a day-to-day, which means there's a chance he'll play this upcoming week. But if it's day-to-day, I would also say there's probably a decent chance he'll miss the game. If he misses it, look for Akello Witherspoon to finally get a helmet in the game.
Woo!
TJ Watt with the hip and knee. The MRI results are negative. Yay! But that doesn't mean he's going to play. So I would kind of expect him to miss this upcoming game just as a precaution, unless somehow magically in a couple of days here he's not really hurting or sore. If he gets a full practice in before Friday or on Friday, he'll play. But if it's limited or not participating at all in practice this week, expect Taco Charlton to get the start and get a real opportunity against this offensive line of the Chargers here. Both starting guards injured in the game, as we said. Kevin Dotson with a high ankle sprain. Expect him to miss minimum probably of a couple of weeks. Maximum could be a month and a half or 2 months, which you hope not to see, because that could be the end of the season at that point.
Yeah.
And then Trey Turner appears to be a more minor injury. So here's to hoping that that's all that is something minor.
Yeah. Time to look forward to this upcoming week against the Chargers. We're going to do this fairly quickly. Nothing too crazy to talk about. And then we're going to look into our 3 keys to success against the Chargers.
We got a couple post-game things still before we
do that. True. Yeah, let's go to that. Yeah.
Monday, Minkah Fitzpatrick tests positive for COVID. Is there a chance that he'll be back before the game? Yes, but it's slight.
Very slight.
Real slight. He'd basically have to test negative Friday and Saturday to be eligible to play Sunday. Or maybe Saturday and Sunday morning. But, yeah, chances are not great of that happening in time. So anticipate Trey Norwood or Miles Killebrew to get the start. Probably Killebrew, just because I think they don't want to put that on Norwood quite yet.
Yeah.
Steelers did sign quarterback James Morgan to the practice squad. Released nose tackle Isaiah Mack in a corresponding move. Quite likely this is just because Ben is still on the COVID list and they like to have at least 3 guys active. But there are a lot of rumors swirling out there right now on Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah.
Stemming from a report by Aditi Akinkabala of the NFL Network. Apparently she overheard a couple coaches from the Steelers staff talking about how lazy Haskins had been in practice. And her report was just basically a small tweet saying that he was lazily throwing passes and just playing around on his cell phone. With a really major opportunity, Mason not having played that well in this previous game, not knowing whether or not Ben will be ready for this upcoming week, and Dwayne being one snap away, you really hope he's taking things a lot more serious than what it's being reported, but it's a real bad look for him, for his coaching staff to be calling him out.
And this, ladies and gentlemen, is where we butt heads.
So, I'm going to explain my take on this real quick, and then I will let James have the floor. So, for those of you who don't know, I did go to school for sports stuff, exercise science. I took some sports moral classes, sports ethics, sports. And then the one that I'm going to get into right now was sports psychology. So, the psychology behind this, in my opinion, and there was a study done. I don't have the exact study. I will look it up to try and find it again, or ask one of my professors from college. There was a study done that went over, okay, how do people prep for games? How do people prep for high action, high energy, high, you know, this would have been a high moment if Mason Rudolph came in. His whole career could have potentially depended on how well he played or how well he didn't play.
If he puts a really good game together against the Lions, we're talking about how he could be the quarterback of the future.
Correct.
But we're not talking about that right now.
No, because he was throwing lousy passes and playing on his phone during pregame warmups. Guess what? Not everyone who performs crazy well in games performs that way in practice, or even gives the same amount of effort in practice. Now, I understand where the effort comes into play. I understand where you want to see some kind of effort put forth. But in my opinion, seeing and the understanding that I have of the psychology of an individual who could potentially be playing in an NFL game to decide their future is basically, it wasn't any less than that. If he went in, that was potentially the future of his NFL career. To me, the fact that he was relaxed was huge. Listen, I could potentially play. Let me play on my phone, whatever. He's relaxed. He's chill. He's in the moment. He's not allowing the nerves to get to him, make him stressed. Throwing lazy passes, in my opinion, is better than not throwing any. If he's just saying, hey, if I might play, I don't want to throw my arm out right now. I don't want to, like, I can warm up while throwing just, you know, dinks and dunks to player, like, to warm up. There's so much more behind this that I think we're just hearing one side of people say, hey, he's lazy. And I also bring back the whole idea of when you look at things socially, if you meet somebody for the first time, this is a far-fetched thing, but you'll understand what I'm saying, James, here in a minute, and those listening. If James, if I'm going to introduce you to somebody and say, hey, I'm sorry, this person is so just, you know, we're going to be working with a new guy at work. I know him. He's super lazy. He's arrogant. He just thinks he knows everything. You're going to go into that meeting him with those thoughts in mind already. That's what I'm thinking is happening right now. I don't think he's necessarily lazy. I think the coaches are viewing him that way because he's not doing everything that they want him to. And yes, there's an aspect of you should be doing what your coaches want you to do. But if he is comfortable enough to be relaxing on his phone, knowing he could potentially be playing in this game, I'm not opposed to that. If that's how he warms up, if that's how he remains calm, if that there's so much that is unseen or undiscovered in the brain and in how people warm up or how people prepare for things, that doesn't bother me one bit. I would have loved to still see him play in this game, and I hope that I see him in the future play for Pittsburgh to show what he can do, because what Mason Rudolph showed me against a winless Detroit Lions team is not enough for me to have any excitement about him in the future, period. James, take
that's away. Fair. What I would say on this is if Dwayne Haskins had any kind of good NFL resume at all, I'm okay with him just being lackadaisical during his practice. But if you're the backup quarterback, most of the snaps are going to the starting quarterback or projected starting quarterback for that week, which means the only way you're even finding out what the game plan is if you're paying attention during practice, because you're not going through any of the snaps. Your only reps that you're getting are mental reps of paying attention to what's going on, which you cannot know what's going on if your head's in your cell phone. It's not an option. It's like last year, he gets benched from Washington, and what's he do instead of going home and getting into the film and getting into the playbook and trying to figure out what he's screwing up? He goes to the strip club during COVID and ends up getting kicked off the team. Like, it's these things that he continues to not focus at the correct times. Like, man, when you're home, be on your cell phone all you want, but you're at work, bro. This is a job. This isn't high school. This isn't even college. Like, this is your job, and you've not done well at it so far in your career, which is why you're a league minimum guy and a third string quarterback. If you continue to give that same amount of effort that puts you in this position forward, you're going to end up with no job at all. Like, if he continues with what has got him to where he is right now, his results will not magically turn into a quarterback that throws a bunch of touchdowns and very few interceptions. It's not happening. He's got to change something. If he does the same exact thing as what he's been doing, he will continue throwing more touchdowns than interceptions if anyone lets him on the field. And if I'm a Pittsburgh coach, I'm not letting him on the field. I'm bringing in James Morgan from FIU, and I'm going to see what he can do because he tore it up at the Senior Bowl practices, and he shows some sort of potential. And if James Morgan takes the practices seriously and Dwayne Haskins is still sitting there saying, whatever, I don't need to know what the plays are. I'm the backup quarterback. Like, yeah, man, I might consider cutting him. Three out of his four preseason games were awful. He had one good preseason game, and he had his career on the line.
Fair.
And he put up one good game out of four.
Fair.
Like, I don't know. I just, like, if it's me and I had a bad reputation, and was known for having a bad work ethic, the last thing I'm ever going to do is take my cell phone out during practice. Like, one of the things that set Russell Wilson apart from his competition when Russell Wilson came out of college is that when he went to the Senior Bowl, every single rep that any quarterback took, whether it was his rep or another one on his team, and there was like four or five quarterbacks per side, right? He got the North and the South teams.
Yep.
He's 10 yards behind him, mimicking the rep, going through the motion and throwing the pass. He's not throwing anything, actually. His hand's empty. But he's going through the motion because he knows even those mental reps count. That's what takes you from being a basic quarterback to an elite one. I just feel like he's got a habit and a resume of not taking things seriously.
Okay.
And you can't, if you're that guy and you've already got a bad reputation, you can't give people more ammunition.
It's fair. I have nothing more to say.
That's fair.
Let me clarify. I could say a lot. We could argue about this back and forth all day. Listen, let us know what you think. Comment on the YouTube video or send us a message, a DM on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. It doesn't matter. Reach out to us. Tweet at us if you want at Steelers by the Lake, BT Lake. I don't remember what it is.
Steelers BT Lake on
BT
Twitter.
BT Lake on Twitter. Let us know what you think. What are your thoughts on Dwayne Haskins looking at his phone during the pregame warm-up session and not taking his rep seriously? Or whatever. Let us know. Let us know your thoughts. I want to know where you stand. Are you Team James or are you Team Cody? Or are you just don't care? Some people might be like that. Anyways, I think that's it, right?
Chargers?
Chargers. Yeah, let's talk about the Chargers time. We're going to go through this real quick with these guys. Quarterback Justin Herbert, we all know about him.
He's a stud, man.
Stud.
Great arm.
Future MVP in the league. Too. Future MVP in the league. I'm calling it now. It has to happen. There's no way it doesn't.
It probably will.
Unless he breaks everything in his body. Running back Austin Eckler with Justin Jackson backing him up. Fullback Gabe Neighbors. Gabe Neighbors. Love that name.
Austin Eckler, a really good weapon in both receiving and rushing.
Hands down.
So,
watch out for the
linebackers
screens.
Better be on their game, right? Linebackers and safeties better be on their game.
That's correct. Talking to you.
Is that one of your keys, Cody?
No, not yet. Okay, no. Cool. I know my keys. Don't you worry. Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, wide receivers with Jalen Guyton and Joshua Palmer backing them up. Give us that offensive line.
I'm going to give you the tight ends first with Jared Cook. He's a pretty excellent tight end, in my opinion, pretty good.
That's fair.
The left tackle, this is all out of order. I hate this. Rashawn Slater, the rookie left tackle.
The lookie left tackle.
an opportunity here for Alex Highsmith to go against a less experienced offensive tackle. Starting left guard, you might have heard of him before, Matthew Filer. We're very familiar with him. Started for Pittsburgh for a number of years at guard and tackle. This is a man that is susceptible to stunts and twists, so we should be running that to his side all game long.
We should destroy Matt Filer in this game because we know him so much.
Please put Cam Hayward up against him, and please stunt him and Alex Highsmith all game long. I would love to see it. I think it'll be real effective. Starting center, Corey Linsley, who's got a pretty good resume there. Brendan Jamies at the right guard position, and then right tackle Storm Norton.
Cool. Great.
Defensive side, the starting linebackers, we got Uchenna Nwosu. There's a mute button, right?
There is a mute button. You didn't hit it.
Some of the fun of it.
Yeah. Uchenna Nwosu. Kyler Fackrell as well on the edge.
Can you hear me or am I muted?
I can hear you perfectly fine. You're good. Edge rusher, you're looking at Joey Bosa, defensive line, Jerry Tillery. They actually have three starting defensive linemen in this, which makes me think they're running a 3-4. I didn't actually realize that they were running a 3-4 until just now. Linville Joseph, Justin Jones are the down linemen with obviously Joey Bosa and Nwosu as the outside guys. They have two starters in that other edge position, which is strange. It reminds me of when we had Eric Ebron and Pat Freiermuth starting tight end together, which was a fun time.
Is one of them Jerry Tillery?
No, Jerry Tillery is listed as a defensive lineman on their website specifically. So
okay.
I'm assuming.
So Tillery is out. He just got put on the COVID list. So did Joey Bosa.
Woo!
So This is huge for Pittsburgh because this is two of their better defensive players, their best pass rusher by quite a bit, one of their best interior defensive linemen as well. So we're not going to have to deal with either one of them, which is drastically going to help with the passing game, having time to throw the ball. Also in the running game, because these are some pretty stout defenders.
Yeah.
So on to the secondary.
You want to finish linebackers or no?
Yeah, who's left? I don't know who you said, to be honest with you.
Oh, no, that's fine. I guess I did edge linebackers was all I did. So I'm assuming inside linebackers,
we got Kaiser White and Drew Tranquil. Kaiser White was a safety in college, converted to middle linebacker. So you got a couple guys here. Drew Tranquil is really a solid middle linebacker. Kaiser White, undersized as he is, that's somebody you want to see Najee running over all game long. So hopefully they get some one-on-one opportunities, because I think Najee will own him in the hole pretty easily.
Yep. Looking at the corners, you have Michael Davis, Chris Harris Jr., and Asante Samuel Jr., a guy that you heard us talk about. Yeah,
we talked a lot about him.
With draft stuff. And then obviously the safeties, Nazir Adderley and Derwin James Jr. I think
you might have heard of Derwin James. Good safety.
Very, very good safety. And then you got special teams, because long snappers count.
Yeah, so Matt Overton counts because he's the long snapper. Punter Ty Long, and then your place kicker, Dustin Hopkins.
Dustin Hopkins. That's what we like.
Sounds like an actor's name.
It does. It really does. Kick return, punt return, both Andre Roberts. He's like their fifth string wide receiver, if I'm not mistaken, maybe even sixth string. Nothing too crazy there. He's quick. He's fast. The way our defense has been covering punts and kicks, minus Derek Watt making a few good plays, slightly concerning, but hopefully nothing is taken back to the house on us. Keys to success. James, you want to go first or you want me to go first?
Yeah, I'll run first with this one. My number one is going to be, contain Austin Ekeler. This is going to be one of the most versatile running backs we've gone against all season long. Very much so used in their passing game. In addition to being an explosive running back. So it's extremely important that we get some good play from the middle linebackers this week. Not salty about that at all, I promise.
Not at all.
Also, a second key for me is going to be the corners. I figured that we're probably going to be down Joe Hayden, just like last week. I assumed we'd be down Chase Claypool. We were. So very important that we get good play from the guys that step up. So James Pierre, Trey Norwood. If Akello Witherspoon gets any playing time, then I'm throwing him in that bundle too. Those guys need to play well. This is a good wide receiver core. So you will have some matchups against some pretty seasoned veterans that we need to be able to take advantage of that and just not get torched. Let Justin Herbert throw for 400 yards.
Yeah.
And then my last key is going to be attacking the weakness that you actually know on this team. Matt Filer, a very strong blocker. We know he's susceptible to the stunts and twists of passing them off correctly and also picking them up when it comes into his hole. So attack that left guard position all game long. Blitz Terrell Edmonds through it. Blitz Devin Bush through it and twist those defensive linemen and outside linebackers on that side all game long. I do believe you'll be able to put some pressure on Justin Herbert, which will allow for more sack opportunities and turnover opportunities.
I like it. I like it a lot. My three keys to success against the lovely Los Angeles Chargers. One, no turnovers. Normally I would say win the turnover battle. Right now, after the last game we had with almost three turnovers, we did have three turnovers. We had two fumbles lost and the interception. I have to say, no turnovers. I want to see us have a zero turnover game. I'm not even going to talk about turnovers on the other side of the ball. I'm not going to talk about it. But no turnovers out of the offensive side of the ball. Second key takeaway, I'm staying on the offensive side of the ball real quick. I'd like to see better play calling on third and short. I think three times James and I saw, or all of us saw, Pittsburgh going really, really deep down the outside of the field on third and short. Hit Pat Freiermuth, like James talked about earlier. Hit one of the quick receivers on a slant, even though I hate seeing those things called. Even go to somewhere over the middle with 15 yards, or give it to do a halfback screen or a tight end screen. I'd rather see those than the play calling we've been seeing, which is basically, I know that I'm kind of contradicting myself, the quick outs, which is you're throwing the ball to the line of scrimmage. I'd rather see a designed screenplay with blockers out in front than those quick outs and hoping that someone can make something happen. I hate seeing that. Draw a play up that it's going to work. And then my last takeaway, I'm going to go to that defensive side of the ball. I want to see us apply pressure with the people that are stepping up defensively, not talking about the secondary. I'm talking specifically Taco Charlton. You know, if Tuskin gets to play, I want to see these guys apply pressure. I want to see them be able to, Isaiah Loudermilk even, I want to see us be able to attack Justin Herbert, not let him get comfortable. If it forces turnovers, great. I just don't want him having wide open players running down the field and all the time in the world to throw it to them, period. So those are my three takeaways, or three keys to success. So
I think, honestly, you know, the Chargers, I feel like right now, are a slightly better team than Pittsburgh is. But Pittsburgh stays to their keys here and really attacks weaknesses, try to lessen some of the strengths of this team, I think they can come away with a win here, especially if Ben comes back. If Ben doesn't come back, I don't feel as good about our chances.
No, no, not at all.
But I think with a healthy Ben Roethlisberger, you got to admit that there's a chance we can beat this Chargers team.
And I would not be shocked if we see Dwayne Haskins or this new guy come in and play potentially, for the simple fact that Mason Rudolph has had 4 years to prove that he can do something for this team, and he hasn't done much. At this point, you're more than assuming, you probably know it's Ben's last year. You either got to find a spark now out of somebody or get ready to move on, and you got to know what you have in order to know if you're moving on or not. So don't be surprised if Haskins gets some playing time or, again, the new guy they just signed to the practice squad. Either way, we could see that for sure. So, again, thank you guys so much for listening. Be sure to like and follow on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, officially, at Steelers by the Lake. And until next time, this is your host, James and Cody, signing off.
Peace.